Get ready for an hour filled with conspiracies, UFOs, ghosts, the paranormal, legends and myths from around the world. Chasing Prophecy Radio, where the paranormal is supernatural. With your hosts, Sean Kelly, Jenny Nicasio, Bob Dog Pagani. Welcome to the Chasing Prophecy Radio, and here are your hosts, Sean, Bob, and Jenny.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to Chasing Prophecy, where we discuss anything and everything beyond the scope of normal. Remember to like us on Facebook and Instagram. And you can also download that app on the Skype for your phone so you can join the conversation. We'd love to hear from you. Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen. So glad to have you here tonight. I'm Jenny Nicasio, along with Sean. Bob won't be joining us tonight. He had some unhappy news this week. His beloved canine German Shepherd, AJ, passed away after just retiring a few weeks ago. It's heartbreaking. He just retired, and there's nothing more devastating than losing a pet. It's getting more crazier out there. With every evening I turn on the news with the anarchy and confusion, I swear, but Sean, do you feel the same way? I mean, come on.
Yes, wonder, I do.
Are we living in the ends of time?
I believe we are. It feels like it.
I mean, it's terrible.
It's like one big lie. One big lie. And it just, what do people want? You know, their fame for 15 minutes and that's it. But those people who want their fame, right, they just like taking it out of proportion. And if it wasn't for that damn media, you know what I mean?
I know.
And that's, you know, all this crap.
Have you heard the predictions? It was going around, a couple of different underground, I call them underground websites. They're not. Okay. They were saying that there was something to do with the Mayan calendar. And my prediction was, what if they got it backwards? What if it wasn't 2012? What if it was 2021? I mean, you never
thought that was interesting.
Yeah, because there's so much craziness, and I can see the apocalypse happening soon with everything on the news. Do you agree with me, or is it just me?
No, I do agree with you. How about, you know, the other day about that major sandstorm?
Oh my God, from Saudi Arabia. Is that the one that they're talking about?
I do believe it is. Think about it, a massive sandstorm.
And it's coming all the way
Mother
over
Earth
here.
Mother Earth is pissed. That's all I can say.
I mean, come on, it's pure madness out there, I swear. Yes. Come on, from the beginning of time, they've been predicting how it's all going to end. The Bible discusses it in Revelations, and I've been finding that really cool. I've been YouTubing it, I swear. What do they say? The good, like the Left Behind series, the good go up to heaven, and the heathens are all left behind. I mean, they portray it every day on those movies, the end of times, with the dead rising from the graves, and we have the zombie apocalypse.
I'm ready. You know,
people love those zombies. I mean, look at Michael Jackson, Thriller. Come on. It was so cool. Zombies.
Yes, I
mean,
it was.
They're awesome. I mean, they're portrayed as the undead, flesh-eating, decaying corpse. And did you see that there was a surge in zombie movies recently? Or was it just me seeing them on Netflix? And even the video games have them?
I want to say I just see them on Netflix. I haven't really seen a surge of them.
Look how successful Walking Dead is. I mean, could that happen? There's like this fascination with the undead. Seriously, the doomsday preppers are actually preparing, you know, that for the zombie apocalypse. My brother always talks about.
Yes, I know two people who are doing that right now.
Oh, that's crazy.
They're waiting for it.
And did you know there's several verified zombie cases reported from the Haitian voodoo culture? Did you know that?
Yes, I did. If I'm not mistaken, they use it from a pufferfish, of thing from the pufferfish. And actually, the reason why they make them zombie, they use them as slaves.
Oh, my God. That's all we need now.
That's what I read.
Zombie slaves. Well, you know what? According to pop culture and folklore, the awakened corpses that have a ravenous appetite for human flesh, they're bitten by a zombie and they become, we know that from, you know, Z and all those zombie movies. They get that zombie virus, but some cultures actually believe that the dead will rise, that they bury them with heavy rocks and they pile them on top of them they do this to prevent them from rising from the grave.
Wow. Where's this at?
I think it was the Egyptians or someone else, cultures that I don't know anything about. I know that, I don't know if the Haitians believe in it, but I know they do believe in the, you know, the zombies, and many people that follow the voodoo religion, some believe their idol zombies revived by a voodoo practitioner known as a Boker, B-O-K-O-R.
And they heard that one before.
Well, they actually bury the dead using herbs and shells and fish shells and animal parts, bones, to create this like concoction that they believe that's a zombie powder, which contains this deadly deadly drug. It's called begins with a T, tetrodotoxin, but no one uses that. Don't go buy this. A disclaimer: don't go buy this and try to make zombies. Yes, you're right. You were right. It comes from the pufferfish. And that's what the chemical is in it. And some other marine species use it to bring back the dead, actually. But technically, they aren't really dead. They're just in this zombie state of mind.
Right.
And so I'm just making sure there's no crazy people out there doing that. Don't do that. Don't do that. Okay. Zombie-like symptoms such as difficulty walking and mental confusion it will bring on, and actually it causes some respiratory problems. And I know that a high dose of it will cause like a paralysis and a coma. And this could cause someone to appear dead, but they're not. And they actually bury them. And that's what really is crazy.
Oh, wow.
But you know what's funny, Sean?
What's that?
There is real zombies reported in medical journals though they're rare, there are several credible reports in medical journals of the people using these chemicals and they actually think that they are zombies, and that's what's really crazy.
In today's world, you know what? I would not doubt that. They probably have zombie parties.
Well, yeah, I can see that because there were some videos floating around Facebook that they had, I guess these people were really high on some drugs that looked like they were doing the zombie dance. What's the best movie? 1968 Zombie Cult Following of the Night of the Living Dead. That was the best zombie movie by George Romero.
Yep.
Did you see them all? I mean, there was Dawn of the Dead, Night of the Living Dead. And what was the other one?
I just saw The Night and the Dawn. That was it.
Oh, I watched them all.
But you know, it's really cool. I investigated that cemetery.
That cemetery is awesome. That's scary.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Give you nightmares. Well, I didn't live too far from there. I lived in Penn Hills growing up, so that wasn't real far from it. But there's just such a lore about the undead, and I don't understand it. A lot of people just love watching them, and zombies have been around forever. I mean, it was in the Bible, the Ezekiel in the Bible, they describe a vision where Ezekiel dropped in a bone yard and prophesies to the bones, and the bones start to shake and become covered with muscle and flesh until they're almost reanimated. It's really crazy stuff. And then I think there was another book in the Bible, Ezekiel, the dead shall rise again. It says it all the time in the Bible.
Right. It's true. And
yeah, all the time they're talking about, the resurrection. I'm not going to that part because I don't want to be blasphemy. What do you call that? I'm not going to say anything, but they're talking about rising from the dead. There's just this fascination with zombies. And why does the modern world have such a love affair with zombies?
I personally think it's because they go and they bite and eat people, to be honest with you. People take their aggression out by watching the movies.
Maybe, but I think... I don't know. I think history has something to do with it, because it's all over our, you know, the history and the Bible and everything. They always talk about it. But did you know? I just found this out, that the Center for Disease, CDC, has a prevention page for people that they are in the. They have they're actually promoting zombie mania, but because they have zombie preparation for it. I mean, what the hell? I mean. They're preparing you for the zombie apocalypse. And if you go to the website, you're going to find it. And it motivates, I guess it, I guess it motivates people to prepare for the disasters. And I don't know, it's just kind of the apocalypse, a big catastrophe. I mean, come on.
give me a bat with nails.
Well, yeah, like on, what was that? Negan. Yeah, on Walking Dead. But whether you're a fan of zombies or the thought of running into one may cause you to stay up at night, because I think it would cause me to it. But who better to tell us more about zombie apocalypse than anybody than storyteller Jackie Drew? She told me how to pronounce this. Druga is a native of Pittsburgh, and she's a prolific writer and filmmaker. And her published works include genres of all types, but she seems to favor the post-apocalyptics and the zombies, if you ask me, by reading her book. But Jackie, welcome to Chasing Prophecy.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so happy you're here. You've written over 30 novels.
Over 150.
Oh, my Lord. Now, okay. Damn. As a fellow author, how in the heck did you do that?
Oh, well, I've been writing for 20 years, and for the most part, you know, the beginning journey of my writing, I work night shift as a security monitor. So I just watch phones and so I got a lot of writing done there. Wow. I write every day. I have a very stringent writing schedule, and, you know, a big chunk of those, well, 31 of those books are my, beginnings, series, which is 31 books in it so far and counting. I have no desire to end that series because people just keep enjoying it. You know, I have a little cult following. So
I'm so impressed. And after the show, I definitely want to talk to you. Maybe we should have lunch sometime. Maybe you can motivate me. I don't have two. I think I have 7 books, and I don't seem to be able to write that much. Seems like, especially now with all this, do you think that any of this going on out there, does it interfere with your writing?
Absolutely. Here's the thing that I've learned. And talking to a lot of people, I even sent a newsletter out to my my readers on my news survey asking them, you know, where is your focus? And people are not focusing on reading, like across the entire board, like 65%, I think it read, were sales down on Amazon for books. And you would think, hey, people are locked in their house. They're going to read books. Well, they're not, because they're reading the news. They're watching TV. They're not even binging on shows like they should be. Now they are. It's starting to come out of that shell. They're a little tired of reading the news. But the thing is, I think between March and April, those 2 months, I think it affected everybody. It even affected me. I slowed down a lot because my focus wasn't there. I mean, like, every time you start to write, you think of something. And one of the big things was a lot of the big advertisers like BookBub and any of the big advertisers were not taking any ads for any virus books, because there were a lot of authors out there immediately pounding out like a 40,000 word book about COVID. They're calling it COVID 22, COVID 30. I'm like, that's taking advantage of the situation. And nobody wants to read about real life. They really don't. You know, they don't want to read about COVID when they're living it.
Yeah, exactly.
And like, you know, they're just going to look at your book and you as an author are going to make it sensational, right? And then they're like, oh, this isn't how it happened. So, I mean, so why even take something real and make it a fiction story? It's just not going to happen. But yeah, I think, you know, a lot of people had problems with concentrating during those months. Everybody did. I mean, my productivity dropped some. I'm back on the ball, though. I try to do between 5,000 and 6,000 words a day.
Wow. That's a lot. Because I know I tried for 2,000 and I had a hard time doing that.
And that's really a good day, though. If you can hit, I always tell writers, if you can hit 1,500 to 1,800 words a day, you just got to, if you're having a hard time focusing, then you need to do word sprints, which you and I will sit down at lunch one day and I'll tell you all about them.
Yeah, you're going to have to tell me all about it. So do you write mostly at night, or is it more during the day?
I have a very, very strict schedule during the day. First thing I get up is I try to get all my emails done, any promotions, anything like that. You know, my correspondence done. And I do my running around, my errands. And then in the afternoon from 3 to 6, I focus on what I call the busy stuff. It's edits that come in. That's any videos I have to edit and things like that. And then I start around 10 or 11 at night, and I go to about 6 in the morning, and I write, and then, you know, I'll write for about an hour, and I'll work on editing, and then I'll write another hour. So I try to put, you know, about 10 hours of work in a day.
That's really awesome. You're also a movie producer.
Yes.
And
I love movies.
Tell us a little bit about that.
I do a lot of short films. I've done, four full-length feature films. I think it might be more. But we did the beginning series, which was, I produced that. I did not direct that. I did not edit that. I only wrote it. It was like 300 pages, which is 300 minutes and screen time. I thought the series for independently produced and the people that did it, which is Maddie G out of Erie, I thought they did a fantastic job on it, bringing my first book of my sci-fi series to life. But I love short films because you get a lot out of it. During the lockdown, I started this. It was amazing to me. So I started this. Everyone filmed their own parts and sent them in, and I edited it. It was called Calling All Friends. And it was amazing how many people didn't want to do it. They were offended that I was trying to find humor in the apocalypse. It was like they were offended by it, that, you know, like, oh, I can't do this. You know, and I'm thinking to myself, well, you know, when I do my next project, when you call me up, I'll say I can't do it, you know, and I do a lot of projects. But filmmaking is fun. I mainly write everything that I produce. I direct it. I edit it. I do the musical score. The full-length feature film Dust that is coming out soon is based on my novel Dust about nuclear war. And I actually starred it. And it's by Mojo West Productions out of India. And the guy was like, wow, this is your first film. I'm like, yeah, it was pretty easy because it's about the apocalypse. Yeah. So it was easy for me to do. So that's coming out. That's filmmaking. I love it. It's a passion I have.
Oh, wow. We have a lot to talk about. So you favor apocalyptic stories?
To read or to write?
To write. So like, how many books do you have are about zombies and apocalypse?
Oh my gosh. It was so funny that you brought that up. I just found this link by accident because I'm trying to get a new book cover designer. And I found this link by accident that lets me know. And my name popped up. I was like, what the heck is this? And it listed every single book. Well, it was missing like maybe 8 or 9 that I had published and in order. So I'm going to pull it up right now. I'm going to say I had the Last Mile series, Dead World series, Sleepers, probably about 22 books or zombies or a form of zombie.
Wow. It's crazy.
What got you into writing zombies? At the beginning, what caught your interest?
I really wasn't a big zombie person at first, because there's only so many ways you could describe gnawing flesh and, you know, sauntering dead beings. I was just strictly apocalypse, like inspired by my infatuation with Charlton Heston and all the 1970s and 80s disaster movies. And I just started writing like disaster shorts. And then I went into, but I was really, a virus scares me. And, you know, because you think about the Spanish flu, that's some scary stuff. I mean, if you think about it, there was only 1.6 billion people on the planet when it hit, and they estimate 50 million people died. In today's standard, that would be 350 million people. So viruses always scared me. And then I delved into Sleepers, which Sleepers are not really zombies. It started out a totally different concept. It really did. It started out with every child on the face of the planet dying. 1.8 billion children dropping dead at the same time, all dying. And another portion of the population comes down with this sleeper sickness, and they all go to sleep. Like, if you've heard old 1800s, the sleeper sickness. But when they get up, they're like demented human beings, enraged. So that's where the sleepers. That was my first real thing in zombies. But what put me ahead was My Dead World, because I wanted to write a zombie novel that didn't focus on the zombies, but it focused on the people's reaction to it. And that one was such a hit. I was really surprised by it. It really surprised me how much of a hit that was.
That's cool.
Why do you think there's a fascination with the flesh eating creatures?
I think it's scary. It's an unknown. It's a fear. I think zombies represent society as a whole, that people are mindless at times, that they will just move and do on instinct, that that as a part of a society that zombies represent, we as people are more, you know, sheep, a dangerous sheep. And I think that's what people are scared of, the unknown, like that. Like the think that, you know, someone that you know is going to rise from the dead and be dangerous. Like, how do you handle that situation? I mean, you know, in the movies, mm-hmm. oh yeah, they put a gun to their head or they kill them. But really, if you're looking at your mom, how easy is that going to be? You're just going to shut the door and run, you know?
Yeah. It's kind of creepy. Sean.
Yeah, that is kind of creepy. You know what? My brother always tells me, he says, if the zombies attacked, I'd be the first one to go, because he'd trip me.
Oh my! You would be the distraction.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll take them away so you all can be saved.
So, Jackie, so do you think, is there going to be a zombie apocalypse?
I think that maybe not in our lifetime, but I do think we will see something similar to it. I think that we will see, you know, have you seen these people on bath salts and how they behave?
Oh my God, yeah.
Yes. I mean, like, I think we could see a rage-type virus or a rage-type situation. I don't see that that's unforeseeable. I mean, let's look at how contagious violence is. Contagious, it is so contagious. You have one person, all it takes is one person in the middle of a mob to act out, and everybody does, okay? So violence is contagious. Now, imagine that there is some sort of virus out there that affected the brain to the point that it affects your ability to act in rage. Like people that are that get angry alcoholics, you know, there's no controlling them. Mm-mm. There's no controlling them when they go on one of their fits of rage. And so I think rising from the dead, I don't think that they would be, if actual dead bodies got up and rose, they wouldn't be that much of a threat, because biology would take into effect. And within 2 weeks, they would be no harm. So everyone just needed to lock themselves away for 2 weeks. But if it was some sort of rage virus, it would be a totally different story.
Oh, absolutely.
Sean, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was wondering, what do you think of all the rage that's going on now? Do you think it's, Like you were saying, how people get in this rage, it takes one person. Do you think that is happening right now?
I think that this whole lockdown played, in my opinion, a lot into what caused so much violence. I think people were so shut in and so angry, because I don't know about you, but I was getting angry about the lockdown. I was mm-hmm. getting angry. I mean, like, yeah. Even now, I mean, like, there are people that aren't on normal schedules. What about the 3 to 11 shift workers that come home from work and they can't even go to the grocery store anymore to pick up groceries, that they have to change their whole sleep patterns to be able to go out? I mean, like, you get angry. Everything is shut down. And it was a means of control, and that's what they were doing. And so you have these people that are bottled up, all this frustration, and finally they're out and they're letting it out. And so, I mean, it's amazing that they reeled it back in as fast as they did with fear, you know, and I didn't expect that to happen. I expected the riots and the protests to finally make an impact and continue. And they just got quelled. They got quelled and mm-hmm. by the media again, you know.
Your book Risen is freaking me out, because Did you know anything about this pandemic before
when I wrote Rise? No, it's Rise. Rise is crazy, because I did not know anything about this. That was written for NaNoWriMo. I wrote that 9 days for NaNoWriMo.
Nine days. How
November.
Do you do yeah. that? 9 days.
Oh, well, that's like five. Well, okay. Always the last day I write is a minimum of 7,000 words. So I usually pound out that last day and like 10,000 words in a few hours. So, I mean, so you got to figure I'm doing my 5,000 words. And then on that last day, but I think Rise is like 70,000 words. So it
yeah,
was,
that's what I said. That was pretty long to be, yeah. able to do that.
Oh my God.
Days.
I loved writing that book, but that was in November before anything happened.
It's really, really freaky, prophetic it's like you had a premonition, because I was reading it and it was like, oh my God, this stuff actually happened. And you were talking about there was the restaurant Pizza Hut. And was that the Pizza Hut on 51?
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah, it is. Like, oh, it's the God, only one open.
I used to work for Pizza Shack. Oh my God. We're on Hawks.
That's the one.
Oh my God. That's so weird.
But yeah, and the boss telling her we gotta keep things normal. And the boss was, now I look at it, I was making a joke, but now you look at it, you're like, wow, she was absolutely right. People need pizza.
It's scary.
They had shut everything down in that. I mean, like, it was the same thing we're dealing with now.
This is so strange, because I'm reading this, like, oh my God, this is like she had a vision or something, because instead of China, it was India.
Right.
I mean, it was just prophetic. I think you might have a sixth sense.
Well, that's what everybody says. Everyone tells me, like, I go back to 9/11. In 1998, 99, I wrote a screenplay called Destination New York. And it dealt with these terrorists hijacking this plane and crashing it into New York City as a bomb. And I sent the screenplay out to, oh God, I couldn't tell you how many people. And it got rejected. And one, I have the rejection letter somewhere that the production company wrote on it, a flying bomb never would happen. Okay. And then 9/11 happened. And my husband had said to me at the time, he called me and goes, turn on the TV. Your screenplay just came to life. And that was before the second plane hit. And at that point, the FBI shut down my website, which was like nothing. I was not even that published of a writer yet. And
they shut it down.
They shut it down. They contacted me for all of my research, who I talked to.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, no, I'm not. It was weird. I mean, because I did a lot of research, but how much fuel was on the plane, because they talk about it in the screenplay. How much fuel was in the plane? How much? See, in my screenplay, they hit the ground because a fully fueled plane flying full speed into the ground would have an impact of a nuclear weapon. It would wipe out two whole square miles of New York City. That's what happened in my screenplay. So they got all my information, everything like that. So like 3 months later, I get this letter. Months later, I get this letter from Homeland Security asking me that if I were to devise a creative terrorist means to attack, what would I do? And I thought everybody got this letter. You know, I thought everybody was asked to submit their, you know, ideas, because I thought Homeland Security was trying to come up with ways to be, you know, proactive about it, you know, stop it. But no, I don't know who. I know that Tom Clancy got one of them. I know that. But I mean,
So why did they get in touch with you? How did they know about it?
Because that was after my screenplay and my website, and looking at on my website, I think I had just written Silent Victor, which was a biological attack in a New York subway. And and I think they were like, oh, this chick is kind of weird. Let's see where her mind goes. You know, and so I sent them, you know, what I thought would happen as far as a terrorist hit would go, how I would do it, you know. And that's, you know, what I sent him. But thank God what I said never happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow.
Well, how did you feel when your husband told you to turn on TV? How did you feel inside when you saw that happen and it was part of your screenplay? What was your feelings?
Well, I knew something was up because the phone was ringing off the hook. I mean, it was ringing. Like, I always stayed up until like 5, 6 in the morning, got the kids off to school, and then lay down, you know? And then, the phone was ringing off the hook. I was annoyed. And when I saw it, I was like, you know, calm. I was, you know, this is it. I mean, I had everybody at my house were, you know, Y2K thinking the world was going to explode. They're all coming to my house. I'm waiting for it to happen. And I'm telling them, guys, nothing happened in the Marshall Islands. It's fine. You know, we're good. Nothing's going to happen at midnight. And, but surprisingly, everybody showed up at my house that night, you know, because they were fearful. But I felt calm. And honestly, as selfish as it was, I thought, wow, I really need to contact that producer who rejected my screenplay and then send his letter back. I think I did. I think I sent it back to him, but, you know, a copy of it. But, you know, everyone that had read my screenplay, like my friends and stuff, because we used to do readings at my house, they all called me up. They couldn't believe that I predicted this.
Oh, it's scary. It's kind of amazing.
I think it's pretty neat, to be honest with you.
It is pretty neat. Did they ever make a movie out of it? Have you ever
done? No. When I started writing apocalypse fiction wasn't cool. It wasn't. Like, people didn't want to read it. And the rejection letters I got were really nice. It's a well-written novel, but nobody really wants to read about the end of the world. Nobody wants to read about zombies or nuclear war, viruses. And so back then when I wrote, I didn't write apocalypse all the time. Like, I had one book called Heaven Shall Fall. I put so much effort into that. And it goes through all seven seals opening of the Bible. And it was an epic book of 1,500 pages. Nobody touched it. Nobody touched it. And so then my in-between books would be like comedies or romantic comedies and things like that, because I didn't want to waste my time writing apocalypse books, even though I love them. Mm-hmm. And nobody wanted to read them. And then it was December 2010 that my friend, I had been published, and I think my total royalties to date on being published in those 4 years was like maybe $300. And he's like, "You got to try that Kindle." And I'm like, "Oh, you know, why would I do that?" And he's like, "Oh, you just got to try it. You got to try it." And I put up my first book. It was Yellow Zone. That's what it was. And at the end of December 2010, and it sold. I was like, "Oh my gosh." And that's where it started. And I realized that there is a reading group out there for apocalypse. And they're the greatest readers I've ever. The ones that read apocalypse books are the best readers ever. They're so faithful. They're harsh, but they're faithful.
they're harsh.
I guess they like to critique you, huh?
You know what? I have a beta group, and there are a few in that beta group that, you know, they call me out. I mean, they'll be like, "Well, you just broke character," or the one woman was really kind about it, but, and I thank her for it because it made a world of difference in the book. She's like, "Why am I not feeling anything here?" And I thought to myself, well, here's why. This is a first person book, and I'm forgetting I'm writing first person. So they're very good for my writing, but they're harsh. They'll tell me when my one editor tells me, "I hate your ending. You know, I was bored." Oh,
that's rude. Oh, bored. So do you do traditional publishing and Kindle?
Yes, I do. Traditional publishing. I finally found a publisher that I love. I absolutely love them. They're out of the UK. They actually approached me after My Dead World. My Dead World did so well, but indie authors got to realize, and a lot of indie authors don't, there's a 3-month life cycle of a book. When you release it, it takes about up to 2 weeks for it to peak, and then it rides a wave of high, and then it starts dropping off. And after 3 months, it's here and there. So, I mean, that's why you need to release a book every 3 to 4 months. Mm-hmm. Well, they came to me.
With this company in England, is a lot of your books being read and sold over in the United Kingdom?
Yes, and also in America. They took on books I had already written, and they're just good. I mean, they do a lot of promotion. They just sold rights to My Dead World to Germany and sent me the cover to the German version of the book. I think it's called the Death Resort. But I mean, they really do. There's an Italian version of several of my books out, and they work really hard. I was one of their first, they're a traditional publisher of nonfiction books that wanted to get into fiction. And I was the first author that they signed on because I have a lot of books out. So, you know, I'm like, okay, what's six? You know, I'll give up six. What's six? Six is nothing to me. And, you know, some authors, six is a lot. But when you have over 100 books, six really isn't much. And they proved themselves to me that, you know, I love them. I mean, I'm at the point now that they just got my my book, What We Become, and they're going to get my next one, Omnicide. And but I'll self-publish, like, Rise, because it's vampires. Anything that's not, like, typical apocalypse, I keep.
So what do you mean you keep? So they're on your Kindle. So they were published and then you gave it to them. They took it.
They were. Yeah. I mean, with the understanding that I would write two new books for them, that I had to write two fresh books, which I did. And the one I really, really enjoyed writing, I wrote it as a man perspective, and it didn't sell that well. I mean, like, I was surprised it didn't sell that well. But Bleak did, my book Bleak did, I wrote for them. And I wrote a second book in the series, a multi-author series for them. But they took on several of my books. Like, My Dead World was already dead and gone when they took it on. And they brought new life. I mean, as an author yourself, Jen, I mean, to go from being ranked, having the rank of 50K, which is average of a dead book or higher, to bringing it to the 2,000, 1,000 ranking on
that's
Amazon.
Great.
That's great. After it's been out for 6 months, is amazing.
Wow.
It's amazing.
That is amazing. You should be proud. That's amazing accomplishment for a writer. It is.
If I ever wrote a book, honest to God, if I ever wrote a book, it would be 5 pages long. Page and a half for the beginning. Page and a half for the middle.
You have a lot of books in you with this paranormal stuff.
You would be surprised. If you just sat down every evening and wrote 500 words, that's 2 pages, and then shut it down, you'd have a book in 2 months.
Really?
Yep. Yep.
Well, that's awesome to hear. Jeannie's been trying to tell me to start writing, and you know, I don't know. It's like, yeah, I'm ready for it. And then all of a sudden it's like, do I really want to do it?
You know? It's a lot of work.
What you got to do is a 10-point method. And that is you write 10 things from beginning to end that you want to happen in your book. And then you break it down from there.
Oh, okay.
I'll tell you, it's easy. It's easy to write a book.
Easier said than done. But getting back to the zombie Walking Dead, it's one of the most popular cable series. And do you just think it's because it's, you know, people like to watch? Are they liking the zombies or are they liking the stories behind the zombies, like the characters?
Well, if you judge by the ratings, how they really dropped, then it was the zombies. But they get old. You know what I mean? Like, you can only do, like I said, the reason I don't write zombies is because you can only describe it so much. Well, you can only be creative so much on Walking Dead. So they have to rely upon the actors and the characters. I thought the story, the whole entire waking up and not knowing what's going on is fantastic. And I think it just gripped people. Did you ever see the British series Survivors?
No, I didn't.
Oh, you have to watch it. It is the best apocalypse series I've ever seen in my life.
Really?
And it only went 2 seasons, but it was the best I've ever seen in my entire life. It is damn scary. I mean, as far as being scary goes. No, I think zombies are scary. I have been in the middle of writing a zombie book and been out in the middle of the night and scared myself thinking I saw something, you know? But I mean, I have.
I'll take you on a ghost hunt, honey.
Oh my gosh. Oh, I've been on them. I've been on them like a ghost. I mean, like, I have some scary experience with ghosts. I don't know. It's because I think my mind is open. I think that's the whole entire thing. Your mind and your brain has to operate a little bit higher as a writer. So you're open to a lot of things. And that's the writer in you that is giving you all those paranormal experiences. I would love to go on a ghost hunt with you. I went and spent the night in the West Virginia State Penitentiary once.
Mm-hmm. No, thank you.
God.
I do these psychic art pictures where I just draw and images come up on the pictures.
Oh, that's
cool. Yeah, so I went with a radio station down there to do it. It was kind of really freaky, and we all had bad experiences for about 3 weeks afterwards.
What do you mean by bad experiences?
Okay, like, I was not scared there at all, and I didn't partake in any of the holding hands seance things. I just went off to my side, and I drew. And one of the things I always did was I always took my rings off when I drew. And when I put them back on for the next drawing, my one ring was missing. And so we left there and we went to the radio station and everyone there, you know, we exchanged phone numbers and stuff. And everyone was calling me. I kept on seeing this guy with really long hair and just this, the nastiest, meanest looking guy you could imagine. And then I had someone call me up and go, look, this is going to sound crazy, but I woke up to see this guy with really long hair standing above my bed. And I'm a lucid dreamer. I don't know if of course you know what that is. And I remember right before it ended, and I called the penitentiary to see if they found my ring. And I remember right before it all ended, it's like I was getting sicker and sicker, like I was possessed. And I had this lucid dream that I was in the cafeteria of the penitentiary. And this guy was there and he grabbed onto me and he was pulling me. And no matter what I was doing, I could not wake up. I knew I was dreaming. I was like trying to wake up. And I yelled out, Frank. And it's going to sound strange. Frank is the name of the hero in my sci-fi series based on a spirit guide that I know is always around me. And this guy who I did not ever envision looked like my Frank came out of nowhere and grabbed this guy and pulled him from me. And from that moment on, I woke up, I stopped being sick, and the next day my ring arrived in the mail.
That is sweet. But you know what? You know, it's crazy. That was a spirit guide. You know, if I'm not mistaken, we had a show on it last week, I do believe, on the sleep paralysis. Mm-hmm. And I think that's maybe what you experience, or what I like to call it is the hag theory.
Well, sleep paralysis is some scary shit.
Yeah.
That is scary.
So you had your ring was there all, like, how long was your ring in the penitentiary?
It was in there for almost 3 weeks.
Oh, my
and,
God.
and it came back via, it came back in the mail. They mailed it to me.
Now, did you sage it?
Oh, I did. I saged everything back then. Oh, my gosh. Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
But it was the most scary, I think, I was. And things don't usually scare me. Like, I've ran into spirits. Like, when my mom passed away, I knew she wasn't ready to go. And I saw, I mean, like, I've seen entities. I've seen orbs. I've seen ghosts. I've never seen a spirit appear as a real human being sitting there where you could touch them. And I had that with her. And it freaked me out.
With your mother?
With my mother.
Oh, and tell me about it.
I remember, and she just passed away like 6 months ago, and I knew it wasn't her time. I knew it wasn't her time. And I had woke up to see her sitting on my bed. And I thought, okay, I'm still sleeping. So I rub my eyes, and she's still sitting there, right? So I jump up. I run into the bathroom. I'm wide awake. Right? And she's still there. And I'm like, what do you want? And she left. And then 2 days later, my phone rings at 2:30 in the morning from her.
Oh, my goodness.
I screenshotted that call coming from her. And her phone had been off at that point for about a week.
That is crazy. Well, you shouldn't have been afraid of her because she's your mom.
Scared. I know. I was scared because I was not ready to see that. You know, like, it was real.
Wow.
It wasn't like
cool.
An apparition or like, I always call it the predator shadow that I've seen. I mean, this was it was like you sitting there looking at me. And it just scared the hell out of me. I thought maybe I was dead. You know,
I would probably think that too.
Yeah.
You ever thought about writing a ghost story?
Yeah.
I have written ghost stories. They just don't go anywhere for me. Like, people don't want to read anything that I write that's not apocalypse. It's strange. Like, Bob is a ghost story. Sergeant Gillian, Letter of Sergeant Gillian is a ghost story. I just wrote a short story. For an anthology, which is a ghost story, but it's strange. I love it. I would love to write a ghost story, but nobody reads it. Nobody reads them.
I got a bunch of people that will.
Really?
I'm sure all your paranormal people. Yeah.
I got a lot of paranormal friends.
Oh my God. I have a whole bunch of paranormal novels that, like, I think collectively, maybe I sold 100 copies on Kindle. Oh. That's it. Yeah.
You're not, maybe they just have you like type, what is that called? Typecast,
yes.
Yeah.
Typecast.
They think you're the girl that's going to write your apocalypse queen. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. And, you know, I did that to myself. Because, like, I love the apocalypse.
You're doing it well. So, you know, don't try to change for somebody.
Right.
You know? What do you feel about the prepping? The people who are doing all the prepping for the apocalypse, the zombie apocalypse and stuff like that.
I think the people that are prepping aren't your panic shoppers. They've been prepping for a while. I mean, like, it was funny because back in January, you know, we always go down to West Virginia to their stores down there because it's real close to where I live. And Triadelphia, which you guys are probably real familiar with. And
I sure do.
I told my friend Terry, who was with me, I'm like, oh, pick up some toilet paper. She's like, why? I'm like, because they're going to tell you what, there's going to be a mad rush on toilet paper. She's like, oh, you're freaking nuts. I'm like, She goes, don't you have them? I'm like, oh, yeah, I always have toilet paper, but I'm going to pick up some more. So I picked one. Every time I went to the store, I picked up a package, you know, for a couple of weeks. And when they ran out, she was like, you are so right. I should have listened to you. And I'm like, yeah, $10 is a roll, babe. Yeah, you should have listened to me.
But I don't get the toilet paper. I don't understand.
I never got it. But, you know, it's on a shelf now. Nobody needs it anymore because they all have a ton of it. Like hand sanitizer. You can find it everywhere now. Nobody needs it.
Yeah, they have too much of it. But I don't get why toilet paper. I mean, they go out and buy a whole carton, you know, cart full of toilet paper.
Because that's the one thing in the apocalypse that will not come back. Ever. I mean, like you can grow food. You can grow everything else. You can make medicine. But you won't be making toilet paper.
So what are they going to do? What are they going to use? Leaves like they do?
wet rags, a bucket with a wet rag in it. I mean, like that's what they did back in the day. That's how they did it back in the day. Now, the preppers, they have their system. Like they buy their food. They rotate their stock, you know, things like that. I mean, we all do. I mean, like I'm not a prepper extreme. But at any point in time, you could find at least a month or two worth of food in my house. I mean, that's just the way I am. So when all this came about, I felt like I was missing out on the panic shopping. Like, I wanted to be out there panic shopping. I mean, it was like, I'm missing out on the fun. I want to be one of these crazy people out there. And I just couldn't bring myself to do it. I went out there with a grocery cart, but I couldn't bring myself to panic shop. I mean, like, I ran into this woman. The day it all went down was the day the NHL announced that they were canceling, right? It was like, that was like the reality shot to everybody. And I go, I'm in shop and say, go in there just for a package of ground meat. I'm like, why is there no ground meat? Not knowing anything that this happened. And I see this woman with three 10-pound, maybe 15-pound bags of Uncle Ben's. She's never going to go through that race, ever, ever.
It sounds like my son. He bought this gigantic bag. I mean, I'm talking probably bigger than what you're talking about. I never seen anything so big. And it was funny. Just recently, he broke the bag and it went all over his kitchen floor.
Oh, my God.
It was like probably 20 pounds. It was huge. It was like one of the Walmart ones. You know, those big, gigantic bags.
They'll never use that rice, ever. It was like they were expecting the stand type virus or something like that to happen where this is it. This is all we're going to have for the rest of our lives. You know, not thinking that, okay, well, you know what, with nobody out there, imagine the amount of deer that are going to be out there. Imagine there's so many deer out there now. I mean, like there's food out there. They just don't think past the, you know, right where you're at. They're not thinking that they could be self-sufficient. They're thinking that, you know, I got to get everything I can now to make me survive. They're never using that rice. That just irritated me.
That rice is going to stay in there forever.
And they're going to get bugs in that rice before they use that rice.
That's crazy.
There's always oodles of noodles.
Yes, oh, my gosh. And I'll tell you what. You better seal them in a plastic bag or airtight them because they get bugs, too.
Ew.
Oh, wow.
They
did
get,
not know
they
that.
Get bugs.
Thank you.
Yes. Yes, they do. They get, like, little maggot-type bugs.
That's
Jackie,
interesting.
Going off topic. We're going to go off topic now. You have viruses in your writing. So
yes, lots.
How would you compare the viruses in your books to the COVID virus?
I told a reader one time, do you want to know why no writer ever uses the coronavirus? Because they're not deadly enough. They're not. They are the common cold on steroids. Most of your population is going 85-95% of your population is going to survive this virus. Okay. If they get it, yeah, they're going to be sick, but they're going to survive it. In my books, you're only going to have an apocalyptic event. One is that the virus is that deadly. It's got to have the, like a 90%, you know, the R naught of it has to be the R naught of this virus right now that we're looking at, which is the rate that you pass it on to others. Like, so if you had COVID with an R naught of one or two, which it is, you pass it on to one or two people. And then they pass it on to one or two people. Your R naught has to be higher than the measles. The measles R naught is 13. So meaning somebody with measles will infect 13 people. The R naught has to be at least 20 to 25 for it to be an apocalyptic event. The case fatality rate has to be at least 60 or 70%. And that's what my virus is. That's what Ebola is. And so you make Ebola airborne, you've wiped out the world.
Yeah. So you did a lot of research.
I do a lot of research. I do a ton of research. I mean, one of the things I hate to be done is called out if I make a mistake, like on something like that. I make sure I double, triple check. I call people in the field that I know. I check every fact I can about a virus before I create a new one. You know, is this possible? Like, a lot of people don't realize that a bacteria can turn into a fungus, and the fungus can turn into a virus. I mean, there are stages that it can go through. Like in RISE, it really was like a fever that lasted like 2 or 3 weeks before people died, you know, and they were dying by, you know, obviously the vampires, but it was very similar to our COVID. It wasn't a highly deadly virus. It really wasn't. And then they found out that's what wasn't killing people. But my virus compared to real life, this real life virus, this isn't scary to me at all. You know, it really isn't. My granddaughter had COVID.
Oh, she did.
Yeah, she did. And I could not get tested, but I had a high fever for, it was 8 days. I got the cough. I had body aches. I was in bed. My granddaughter lives with me, and she sleeps in bed with me. And she sleeps with me. And I'm like, okay. And I came down with it like within 4 or 5 days of her.
So did you take Tylenol? Did you have a fever every day, or did the fever go away?
Every single day.
My fever didn't go away?
My fever never went below. I think I had one day where it went below 100. The highest it was 102, but it stayed about 100, 101.
And
constantly.
Tylenol didn't bring it down?
Nope. It did not. It did not. It was crazy. But I mean, like, I would say I had a very mild case. I say my granddaughter had a worse case because hers would spike really high at night, really high at night. And she didn't do any, she's 9 when she got it. And she really didn't do anything, but she came back. She was in Beaver County with her dad. And that's when she came back with it, like a couple of days after her trip back. She was cuddling in bed with me that night. We were watching TV, you know, and like when she got, so when we quarantined together in the game room. You know, where there's, you know, a bathroom and the bed. So we quarantined together.
Oh, that's good.
I mean, it's my baby.
It's your baby. I know when I had H1N1, I had a fever for one night and it was gone after that. After I took Tylenol.
Yeah. I mean, like it does bring it down. It doesn't break it. It doesn't. And then when it broke, you knew that fever broke because all of a sudden you woke up. I mean, like I know from this, and then I felt like I had energy for days. I didn't feel like I had energy. Yeah. So I didn't really let it be known because I didn't want my readers to get too concerned about it, but I did let them know after I was all better about it.
Yeah. Going back to your books, it seems like I said it a little while ago, but your books seem prophetic to you. Like your virus is played out in your books, almost to very similar to how we reacted to them. And how does your virus in your book similar? You already said to COVID, there's no similarities. It's not a coronavirus. So did you make this up? When I mean it, was this your virus that you made up, or was it, did you follow what's out there? Like
most of what I have in my books are based on one of the H1, N1, H2, and 7 strains, all based on those mutated. So I made them more strong. That's
you made them strong.
But
you did all your research with that.
I did all my research.
Do you think that there's a virus coming that's going to destroy humanity?
Virus X. Virus X is, I have my book, One Final Gasp, that deals with Virus X. Look it up. Your listeners can look it up. Virus X. It is what is being called the doomsday virus. It is what every scientist out there is waiting on. That is what they're working on a cure for. And in One Final Gasp, the one scientist invents it so he could beat it if it ever came out, and it got out.
That's not a good thing.
Yeah, so it got out. And that's how it happened. It started in France. But if you look up Virus X, that's what they're calling the doomsday virus. That would be one with the R-naught factor higher than 20, with a fatality rate higher than 70. I mean, it's everything that you should be scared of, and it's out there. we're just waiting for it to emerge.
It's already out there. They made
it's
it.
It's out there. I believe so, yes.
Well, why I don't understand what the fascination is of making viruses that can kill people.
So they can beat it if nature ever decides to release it. But it's not going to be nature that causes it. It's going to be like they talk about the Spanish flu, or they talk about measles is horrible. I don't think people realize how deadly measles and smallpox is. Okay. Russia in 1993 invented something called Ebola pox. Okay. Which was a hybrid of Ebola and smallpox. The death rate of Ebola with the communicability rate and airborne value of smallpox. This was the most deadliest biological weapon ever. When Russia shut down their biological sites, 100 suitcases of that disappeared.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
It's out there. That's my book, Sealed In. That's what that's
sealed in.
Like. Sealed in.
I'm gonna have to read that one.
That is scary. That fact that is real and it's out there is scary. I did the Brad Meltzer Decoded show about that.
Go ahead, Sean.
Oh no. Real quick, my son, what you were talking about, Ebola and all that, he just got his doctor from Ohio State as a microbiologist. And he did a lot of experiments with that stuff down at Ohio State. So he don't, you know, what really tells us what goes on with whatever they're doing down there. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I think he can make a weapons of mass destruction, to be honest with you. Yeah, it is.
Oh, he could.
It's really scary.
I bet he could. But he got a job out in Indiana State, and he's working for a cattle feed company, you know, and he'll be in their labs checking it out, you know what I mean? See all kinds of stuff. So it's pretty cool. But I'm proud of him.
You should be.
Oh, I would be too. I would be too.
Oh, and, you know, God, yes.
It's folks like your son that if virus X emerges, will all be called to solve it. All of them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No doubt.
Well, we're coming to that.
We tried to get some info from him for the COVID, and he said, I don't deal with that.
Well, we're coming to the bewitching hour where we have to say goodnight. So
I appreciate this.
I appreciate it too. Tell our audience where we can find out your work, where we can find you.
You can find all of my work on Amazon under Jacqueline Druga, Druga, or you can go to www.JacquelineDruga.com. Find me on Facebook. If you put Pittsburgh Apocalypse author Jackie in there, you'll find me in Google. I'm up there. I'm like flies on shit. Sorry.
Great. That's okay. Well, thanks for joining us tonight. And please check out my author page on Amazon. And guys, well, it was great with having you tonight. And you have a great, great night. We'll see you next week.
All right. Thank you.
We're going to be with Sean next week. Paranormal, talking paranormal. So good night, everyone.
Good night.